"You're looking fit, Mr. Vimes," said Sweeper. "You were in the watch house, right?" said Vimes. "Snouty called you lousy."
Yes, Mr. Vimes, let's say. I've been sweeping up there every night for the past 10 years, all for 2 pence and all the kicks I can't dodge, just waiting for you.
And you told Rosie Palm where I'd gone, too. You were the monk on the bridge.
Right again. Couldn't be sure she'd catch up.
How do you know who I am?
Don't get excited, Mr. Vimes, said Sweeper calmly. I'm here to help you, Your Grace. And I'm your friend because right now I'm the only person in the world who will probably believe anything you tell me about, oh, thunderstorms and falls, that sort of thing. At least, he added, the only sane person.
He watched Vimes as the man sat quite still for half a minute.
Good, Mr. Vimes, said Sweeper. Thinking. I like that in a man.
This is magic, right? said Vimes at last.
Something like that, yes, said Sweeper. For instance, just now we moved you back in time, just a few seconds, just so you wouldn't do anything you'd regret. Can't say I'll blame you for wanting to have a go at someone after all you've been through, but we don't want any harm to come to you, do we?
Ha! I almost had my hands round your throat.
Sweeper smiled. It was a disarmingly little smile.
Smoke, he said.
He fumbled in his robe and produced a ragged hand-rolled cigarette.
Thanks, but I've got me own,
Vimes began automatically. His hand stopped halfway to his pocket.
Ah, yes, said Sweeper. The silver cigar case. Sibyl gave it to you as a wedding present, right? Shame about that.
I want to go home, said Vimes. It came out as a whisper. He hadn't been sleeping in the past 12 hours, merely recovering. This time it was Sweeper who sat in silence, apart from the rumble of the cylinders.
"You're a policeman, Mr. Vimes," he said eventually. "Well, I'd like you to believe, for a while, that I'm a sort of policeman too, all right? Me and my colleagues, we see that things happen, or don't happen. Don't ask questions right now, just nod."
Vimes shrugged instead.
"Good. And let's say on our patrol we found you, as it might be, in a metaphorical kind of way, lying in the gutter on a Saturday night singing a rude song about wheelbarrows."
"I don't know a rude song about wheelbarrows," Sweeper sighed.
"Hedgehogs, custard, one-string fiddles, it really doesn't matter. Now we found you a long way from where you should be, and we'd like to get you home. But it's not as easy as you might think."
"I've gone back in time, haven't I? It was that bloody library. Everyone knows the magic in there makes strange things happen."
"Well, yes. It was mainly that, yes. It's more true to say that you, got caught up in a major event."
"Can anyone get me back? Can you get me back?"
"Well," said Sweeper, looking awkward.
"Wizards can if you can't," said Vimes. "I'll go and see them in the morning."
"Oh, you will you? I'd like to be there when you do. These ain't the wizards under decent old Redcolly, you know, and you're not His Grace Commander Sir Samuel Vimes neither. You're a rough-looking devil who'll be burbling a story about thunderstorms and flying through time to a bunch of rather devious and unpleasant men. You'll be lucky if they only laugh at you. Anyway, even if they wanted to be helpful, they'd hit the same problem."
"And what's that?"
"It can't be done. Not yet."
For the first time in the conversation, Sweeper looked ill at ease.
"The big problem I'm facing, Mr. Vimes, is that I ought to tell you a few things that I'm not, in any circumstances, allowed to tell you. But you're a man who isn't happy until he knows the facts. I respect that. So, if I tell you everything, can you spare me, 20 minutes of your time? It could save your life."
"All right," said Vimes.
"But what?"
"You've got a bargain," said Sweeper. "Roll on, boys." The noise of the big cylinders changed for a moment, and Vimes felt a very slight shock, a suggestion that his whole body had just gone plib.
20 minutes, said Sweeper. "I'll answer every question, and then, Mr. Vimes, we'll have a little chat. and send you back from 20 minutes in the future to now, and you'll tell yourself what you and me agree you ought to know, which will be most of it, really. You're a man who can keep secrets, okay?
Yeah, but... Vimes began. The tone of the spinning cylinders changed slightly. Sam Vimes saw himself standing in the middle of the room.
That's me! Yeah, right, said Sweeper. Now listen to the man.
Hello, Sam, said the other Vimes, staring not quite at him. I can't see you, but they say you can see me. Remember the smell of lilac? You thought about those who died. And then you told Willikins to hose down that kid. And, you've got a pain in your chest and you're a bit worried about it, but you haven't told anyone. That's about enough, I think. You know I'm you. Now, there's some things I can't tell you. I can know them because I'm in a...
The speaker stopped and looked away, as if he was taking instruction from someone off stage.
A closed loop. You could say I'm 20 minutes of your life you don't recall. Remember when you had...
A sensation that his whole body had just gone plib.
Sweeper stood up. I hate to do this, he said, but we're in the temple and we can pretty much dampen out the paradoxes. On your feet, Mr. Vimes, I'm going to tell you everything.
You just said you couldn't.
Sweeper smiled.
Need any help with those handcuffs?
What? These old capstick mark ones? No, just give me a nail in a couple of minutes.
How come I'm in a temple?
I brought you here.
You carried me?
No, you walked with me. Blindfolded, of course, and then, when you were here, I gave you a little drink.
I don't remember that.
Of course not. That was the purpose of the drink. Not very mystical, but it does the job. We don't want you coming back here now, do we? This place is supposed to be a secret.
You messed up my memory.
Now, you see here.
Vimes half stood, but Sweeper held up his hands placatingly.
Don't worry. Don't worry. It just made you forget a few minutes, he said.
How many minutes?
Just a few. Just a few. And it had herbs in it. Good for you, herbs.
And then we let you sleep.
Don't worry. No one is after us. They'll never know you've gone. See these things here?
Sweeper picked up an openwork box that lay beside his chair. It had a strap like a knapsack, and Vimes could just see a cylinder inside the box.
This is called a procrastinator, said the monk. And it's a tiny version of the ones over there, the ones that look like your granny's mangle. I'm not going to get technical, but when it's spinning, it moves time around you. Did you understand what I just said?
No.
All right. It's a magic box. Happier?
Go on, said Vimes grimly.
You wore one of these, and I led you here from the watch house. Because you were wearing it, you were, shall we say, outside time. And after we've had this little talk, I'll take you back to the watch house, and the old captain won't know any difference. No time is passing in the outside world while we're in the temple. The procrastinators take care of that. Like I said, they move time around. Actually, what's really happening is that they are moving us back in time at the same time that time moves us forward. We've got others around the place. Good for keeping food fresh. What else can I tell you? Oh, yeah. It helps keep track if you just think of things happening one after another, believe me.
This is like a dream, said Vimes.
There was a clink as the handcuffs sprang open.
Yes, it is, isn't it? Said Sweeper calmly. And can your magic box take me home? Move me in time all the way to where I ought to be?
This? Ha! No, this is strictly for small-scale stuff.
Look, Mr. Sweeper. I've spent the last day fighting a right bastard on a roof and getting beaten up twice and sewn up once and, ha, stitched up too. I've got the impression I should be thanking you for something, but I'm damned if I know what it is. What I want is straight answers, mister. I'm the commander of the watch in this city.
Don't you mean you will be? Said Sweeper.
No. You told me it helps if I think of things happening one after another. Well, yesterday, my yesterday, I was commander of the watch, and I bloody well still am the commander of the watch. I don't care what anyone else thinks. They are not in possession of all the facts.
Hold on to that thought, said Sweeper, standing up.
All right, Commander. You want some facts? Let's take a walk in the garden, shall we?
Can you get me home?
Not yet. It's my professional opinion that you're here for a reason.
A reason? I fell through the bloody dome!
That helped, yes.
Calm down, Mr. Vimes. It's all been a great strain, I can see.
Sweeper led the way out of the hall. There was a big office outside, a hubbub of quiet but purposeful activity. Here and there, among the worn and scratched desks, there were more cylinders like the ones Vimes had seen in the other chamber. Some of them were turning slowly.
"Very busy, our Ankh-Morpork section," said Sweeper. "We had to buy the shops on either side."
He picked up a scroll from a basket by one desk, glanced at the contents, and tossed it back with a sigh.
"And everyone's overworked," he added. "We're here at all hours, and when we say all hours, we know what we're talking about."
"But what is it you do?" said Vimes.
"We see that things happen."
"Don't things happen anyway?"
"Depends what things you want. We are the monks of history, Mr. Vimes. We see that it happens."
"I've never heard of you, and I know this city like the back of my hand."
"Right. And how often do you really look at the back of your hand, Mr. Vimes?"
"We're in Clay Lane, to stop you wondering."
"What? Those loony monks in the funny foreign building between the pawnbrokers and the shonky shop? The ones who go dancing round the street banging drums and shouting?"
"Well done, Mr. Vimes. It's funny how secretly you can move when you're a loony monk dancing through the streets banging a drum."
"When I was a kid, most of my clothes came from the shonky shop in Clay Lane," said Vimes. "Everyone we knew got their clothes from the shonky shop. It used to be run by a foreign guy with a funny name. Brother Soonshine Sun," said Sweeper. "Not a hugely enlightened operative, but a genius when it comes to pricing fourth-hand schmutter.
Shirts so worn you could see daylight through them, and trousers as shiny as glass," said Vimes.
"And by the end of the week, half the stuff was in the pawn shop."
"That's right," said Sweeper. "You'd pawn your clothes in the pawn shop, but you'd never buy clothes from the pawn shop, because there were standards, right?"
Vimes nodded. When you got right down to the bottom of the ladder, the rungs were very close together, and oh my, weren't the women careful about them. In their own way, they were as haughty as any duchess. You might not have much, but you could have standards. Clothes might be cheap and old, but at least they could be scrubbed. There might be nothing behind the front door worth stealing, but at least the doorstep could be clean enough to eat your dinner off, if you could have afforded dinner. And no one ever bought their clothes from the pawn shop. You'd hit bottom when you did that. No, you bought them from Mr. Sun at the shonky shop, and you never asked where he got them from.
"I went to me first proper job in a suit from the shonky shop," he said. "Seems like centuries ago now."
"No," said Sweeper. "It was only last week."
Silence ballooned. The only sound was the purr of the cylinders dotted around the room. Then Sweeper added,
"It must have occurred to you."
"Why? I've spent most of the time here being beaten up or unconscious or trying to get home. You mean I'm out there somewhere?"
"Oh, yes. In fact, last night, you saved the day for your squad by aiming a crossbow at a dangerous miscreant who was attacking your sergeant."
The silence ballooned larger this time. It seemed to fill the universe. Eventually, Vimes said,
"No, that's not right. That never happened. I would have remembered that. And I can remember a lot about my first weeks in the job."
"Interesting, isn't it?" said Sweeper. "But is it not written? There's a lot goes on we don't get told. Mr. Vimes, you need a short spell in the garden of inner city tranquility."
It was indeed a garden, like a lot of other gardens you got in areas like Clay Lane. The grey soil was nothing more than old brick dust, elderly cat mess, and generalised semi-rotted dross. At the far end was a three-hole privy. They were built handily by the gates to the back lane, so the night soil men didn't have far to go. But this one had a small stone cylinder turning gently beside it. The garden didn't get much proper light. Gardens like this never did. You got second-hand light, once the richer folk in the taller buildings had finished with it. Some people kept pigeons or rabbits or pigs on their plots, or planted, against all experience, a few vegetables. But it'd take magic beans to reach the real sunlight in gardens like this. Nevertheless, someone had made an effort. Most of the spare ground had been covered with gravel of different sizes,
and this had been carefully raked into swirls and curves. Here and there, apparently with great thought, some individual larger stones had been positioned. Vimes stared at the garden of rocks, desperate for anything to occupy his attention. He could see what the designer had in mind, he thought, but the effect had been spoiled. This was the big city, after all. Garbage got everywhere. The main disposal method was throwing it over a wall. Sooner or later, someone would sell it on, or possibly eat it. A young monk was carefully raking the gravel. He gave a respectful bow as Sweeper approached. The old man sat down on a stone bench.
Push off and get us 2 cups of tea, lad, will you? He said. 1 green with yak butter, and Mr. Vimes will have it boiled orange in a builder's boot, with 2 sugars and yesterday's milk, right?
That's how I like it, said Vimes weakly, sitting down. Sweeper took a deep, long breath.
And I like building gardens, he said. Life should be a garden.
Vimes stared blankly at what was in front of them.
Okay, he said. The gravel and rocks, yeah, I can see that. Shame about all the rubbish. It always turns up, doesn't it?
Yes, said Lutze. It's part of the pattern.
What? The old cigarette packet?
Certainly. That invokes the element of air, said Sweeper.
And the cat doings?
To remind us that disharmony, like a cat, gets everywhere.
The cabbage stalks?
The used Sonkey?
Named after Wallace Sonkey, a man without whose experiments with thin rubber the housing pressure in Ankh-Morpork would have been a good deal more pressing.
At our peril, we forget the role of the organic in the total harmony. What arrives, seemingly by chance, in the pattern is part of the higher organization that we can only dimly comprehend. This is a very important fact and has a bearing on your case.
And the beer bottle?
For the first time since Vimes had met him, the monk frowned.
You know, some bugger always tosses one over the wall on his way back from the pub on Friday nights. If it wasn't forbidden to do that kind of thing, he'd feel the flat to my hand and no mistake.
It's not part of the higher organization.
Possibly. Who cares? That sort of thing gets on my fingers. It really does, said Sweeper.
He sat back with his hands on his knees. Serenity flowed once more.
Well, now, Mr. Vimes, you know the universe is made up of very small items.
Huh?
We've got to work up to things gradually, Mr. Vimes. You're a bright man. I can't keep telling you everything is done by magic.
Am I really here too? In the city, I mean, a younger me.
Of course. Why not?
Where was I?
Oh, yes. Made up of very small items, and this is not a good time to be in the watch, I remember. There's a curfew, and that was only the start.
Small items, Mr. Vimes, said Sweeper sharply. You'll need to know this.
Oh, all right. How small?
Very, very small. So tiny that they have some very strange ways indeed.
Vimes sighed. But I ask you, what ways are these, yeah?
I'm glad you asked that question. For one thing, they can be in many places at once.
Try to think, Mr. Vimes.
Vimes tried to concentrate on what was probably the discarded fish and chip wrapper of infinity. Oddly enough, with so many horrible thoughts crowding his head, it was almost a relief to put them on one side in order to consider this. The brain did things like that. He remembered once when he'd been stabbed and would have bled to death if Sergeant Angwer hadn't caught up with him, and how as he lay there he'd found himself taking a very intense interest in the pattern of the carpet. The senses say, we've only got a few minutes. Let's record everything, in every detail.
That can't be right, he said. If this seat is made up of lots of tiny things that can be in lots of places at once, why is it standing still?
Give the man a small cigar,
said Sweeper, jubilantly.
That's the big problem, Mr. Vimes. And the answer, our abbot tells us, is that it is in lots of places at once.
Ah, here's the tea.
And in order for it to be in lots of places at once, the multiverse is made up of a vast number of alternative universes, an oodleplex of oodleplexes. That's like the biggest number anyone can think of, ever,
just so as it can accommodate all the quantum. Am I going too fast for you?
Oh, that, said Vimes. I know all about that. Like, you make a decision in this universe, and you made a different decision in another one. I heard the wizards talking about that at a posh reception once. They were arguing about the glorious 25th of May.
And what were they saying?
Oh, all the old stuff. That it would have turned out different if the rebels had properly guarded the gates and the bridges, and that you can't break a siege by a frontal attack. But they were saying that, in a way, everything happened somewhere.
And you'll believe them.
It sounds like complete thungers. But sometimes you can't help wondering, what would have happened if I'd done something different?
Like when you killed your wife?
Sweeper was impressed at Vimes's lack of reaction.
This is a test, right? You're a quick student, Mr. Vimes. But in some other universe, believe me, I hauled you off and punched you one.
Again, Sweeper smiled the annoying little smile that suggested he didn't believe him.
You haven't killed your wife, he said, anywhere. There is nowhere, however huge the multiverse is, where Sam Vimes, as he is now, has murdered Lady Sibyl. But the theory is quite clear. It says that if anything could happen without breaking any physical laws, it must happen. But it hasn't. And yet, the many universes theory works. Without it, no one would ever be able to make a decision at all.
So
what people do matters, said Sweeper. People invent other laws. What they do is important. The abbot's very excited about this. He nearly swallowed his rusk. It means the multiverse isn't infinite, and people's choices are far more vital than they think. They can, by what they do, change the universe.
Sweeper gave Vimes a long look.
Mr. Vimes, you're thinking, I'm back in time, and damn me, I'm probably going to end up being the sergeant that teaches me all I know, right?
I've been wondering. The Watch would offer any gutter trasher job in those days, because of the curfew and all the spying, but look, I remember Keel, and yes, he did have a scar and an eye patch, but I'm sure as hell that he wasn't me.
Right. The universe doesn't work like that. You were indeed taken under the wing of one John Keel, a watchman from Pseudopolis, who came to Ankh-Morpork because the pay was better. He was a real person. He was not you. But do you remember if he ever mentions to you that he was attacked by two men not long after he got off the coach?
Hell, yes, said Vimes. The muggers.
He got his scar that way. A good old Ankh-Morpork welcome. But he was a tough man, took them both down, no problem.
This time, there were three, said Sweeper.
Well, three's trickier, of course, but
you're the policeman. You guess the name of the third man, Mr. Vimes.
Vimes hardly had to think. The answer erupted from the depths of his darker suspicion.
Carsa!
He soon settled in, yes.
The bastard was in the next cell. He even told me he'd grab some money.
And you're both stuck here, Mr. Vimes. This isn't your past any more.
Not exactly.
It's a past. And up there is a future. It might be your future, but it might not be.
You want to go home now, leaving Carsa here and the real John Keel dead?
But there'll be no home to go to, if you could do that. Because young Sam Vimes wouldn't get a swift course in basic policing from a decent man if you did. He'll learn it from people like Sergeant Nock and Corporal Quirk and Constable Colon. And that might not be the worst of it by a long way.
Vimes shut his eyes. He remembered how wet behind the ears he'd been. And Fred, well, Fred Colon hadn't been too bad, under the half-hearted timorousness and lack of imagination. But Quirk had been an evil little sod in his way, and as for Nock, well, Nock had been Fred's teacher, and the pupil wasn't a patch on the master. What had Sam Vimes learned from Keel? To stay alert, to think for himself, to keep a place in his head free from the Quirks and Nocks of the world, and not to hesitate about fighting dirty today if that was what it took to fight again tomorrow. He'd often thought he'd have been dead long ago if it wasn't for... He looked up sharply at the monk.
Can't tell you that, Mr. Vimes,
said Lutze.
Nothing certain cause of quantum.
But look, I know my future happened because I was there.
No. What we've got here, friend, is quantum interference. Mean anything?
No.
Well, let me put it this way. There's one past and one future, but there are two presents. One where you and your evil friend turned up, and one where you didn't. We can keep those two presents going side by side for a few days. It takes a lot of run time, but we can do it. And then they'll snap back together. The future that happens depends on you. We want the future where Vimes is a good copper, not the other one.
But it must have happened, snapped Vimes. I told you, I can remember it. I was there yesterday.
Nice try, but that doesn't mean anything anymore, said the monk. Trust me. Yes, it's happened to you, but even though it has, it might not, cause of quantum. Right now, there isn't a Commander Vimes-shaped hole in the future to drop you into. It's officially uncertain. But it might not be, if you do it right. You owe it to yourself, Commander. Right now, out there, Sam Vimes is learning to be a very bad copper indeed, and he learns fast.
The little monk stood up.
I'll let you think about that, he said.
Vimes nodded, staring at the gravel garden. The sweeper crept away quietly and went back into the temple. He walked to the other side of the office. He removed a strange-shaped key from around his neck and inserted it into a small door. The door opened. Brilliant sunlight burst ahead of him. He walked on, his sandals leaving the cold flagstones and walking onto well-trodden earth in broad, hot daylight. The river had a different course this far back in the past, and present-day residents of Ankh Morpork would have been surprised at how pleasant it looked 700,000 years ago. Hippos sunbathed on a sandbank out in midstream, and, according to Q, were getting troublesome lately. He'd had to set up a little temporal fence around the camp at nights, so that any hippo trying to wander in among the tents found themselves back in the water with a headache. Q himself, his straw hat protecting his head from the hot sun, was supervising his assistants in a vined-off area. Lutze sighed as he walked towards it. There were going to be explosions. He knew it. It wasn't that he disliked Q, the Order's master of devices. The man was a sort of engineering equivalent of the Abbot. The Abbot had taken thousand-year-old ideas and put them through his mind in a new way, and as a result the multiverse had opened for him like a flower. Q, on the other hand, had taken the ancient technology of the procrastinators that could save and restore time, and had harnessed it to practical, everyday purposes, such as, yes, blowing people's heads off. It was something that Lutze tried to avoid. There were better things to do with people's heads. As Lutze approached, a line of joyful dancing monks wove their way along a bamboo replica of a street, letting off firecrackers and banging gongs. As they reached the corner, the last monk turned and lightly tossed a little drum into the outstretched arms of a straw dummy. The air shimmered, and the figure disappeared with a small thunderclap.
"Nice to see something not blowing anyone's head off," said Lutze, leaning on a vine rope.
"Oh, hello, sweeper," said Q. "Yes, I wonder what went wrong. You see, the body should have moved forward by a microsecond and left the head where it was." He picked up a megaphone.
"Thank you, everyone. Places for another run. Soto, take over, please."
He turned to Lutze.
"Well, he is thinking about it," said the sweeper.
"Oh, for heaven's sake, Lutze. This is completely unauthorized, you know. We're supposed to prune out rogue history loops, not expend vast amounts of time keeping them going."
"This one's important. We owe it to the man. It wasn't his fault. We had the major temporal shattering just as he fell through the dome."
"Two timelines running side by side," moaned Q. "That's quite unacceptable, you know. I'm having to use techniques that are completely untried."
"Yes, but it's only a few days.
What about Vimes? Is he strong enough? He's got no training for this."
"He defaults to being a copper. A copper's a copper wherever he is."
"I really don't know why I listen to you, Lutze. I really don't," said Q. He glanced up at the arena and hurriedly raised his megaphone to his lips.
"Don't hold it that way up! I said don't!"
There was a thunderclap. Lutze didn't bother to look round. Q lifted the megaphone again and said wearily,
"All right, someone please go and fetch Brother Kai, will you?
Start looking around, oh, 2 centuries ago. You don't even use these very useful devices, I devise, he added to Lutze.
I don't need to, said Lutze. Got a brain. Anyway, I use the temporal toilet, don't I?
A privy which discharges 10 million years into the past was not a good idea, Sweeper. I'm sorry I let you persuade me. It's saving us 4 pence a week to Harry King's bucket boys, Q. And that's not to be sneezed at. Is it not written, a penny saved is a penny earned? Besides, it all lands in a volcano anyway, perfectly hygienic.
There was another explosion. Q turned and raised his megaphone.
Do not bang the tambourine more than twice, he bellowed. It's tap, tap, throw, duck. Please pay attention.
He turned back to the sweeper.
4 more days at most, Lutze, he said. I'm sorry, but after that I can't hide it in the paperwork. And I'll be amazed if your man can stand it. It'll affect his mind sooner or later, however tough you think he is. He's not in his right time.
We're learning a lot, though, Lutze insisted. For a perfectly logical chain of reasons, Vimes ended up back in time, even looking rather like Keel, eye patch and scar. Is that narrative causality, or historical imperative, or just plain weird? Are we back to the old theory of the self-correcting history? Is there no such thing as an accident, as the abbot says? Is every accident just a higher order design? I'd love to find out.
4 days, Q insisted. Any longer than that, and this little exercise will show up, and the abbot will be very, very annoyed with us.
Right you are, Q, said the sweeper meekly.
He'll be annoyed if he has to find out, certainly, he thought as he walked back to the door in the air. He'd been very specific. The abbot of the history monks, the men in saffron, no such monastery, they had many names, couldn't allow this sort of thing, and he'd taken pains to forbid Lutze from this course of action. He had added, but when you know, I expect historical imperative will win.
Sweeper went back to the garden and found Vimes still staring at the empty baked bean tin of universal oneness.
Well, Commander, he said,
are you really like policeman for time, said Vimes.
Well, in a way, said Sweeper.
So you make sure the good stuff happens?
No, not the good stuff. The right stuff, said Sweeper.
But frankly, these days, we have our work cut out making sure anything happens. We used to think time was like a river. You could row up and down and come back to the same place. Then we found it acted like a sea, so you could go from side to side as well. Then it turned out to be like a ball of water. You could go up and down, too. Currently, we think it's like, oh, lots of spaces all rolled up. And then there's time jumps and time slips, and humans mess it up, too, wasting it and gaining it. And then there's quantum, of course, the monk sighed. There's always bloody quantum. So, what with one thing and another, we think we're doing well if yesterday happens before tomorrow, quite frankly. You, Mr. Vimes, got caught up in a bit of an event. We can't put it right, not properly. You can.
Vimes sat back.
I've got no choice, have I? He said. As my old sergeant used to say, you do the job that's in front of you.
He hesitated.
But that's going to be me, isn't it?
I taught me all I know. No, I explained. I didn't understand it. But perhaps I don't have to.
The sweeper sat down.
Good. And now, Mr. Vimes, I'll take you back inside and we'll work out what you need to know from all this, and Q will set up the spinners and we'll just bounce you in time a little so that you give yourself the message. You know you did it because you saw it. We can't have you running around knowing all about us.
I'll get suspicious.
You'll have to make it convincing.
I'll still be suspicious.
You won't trust even yourself?
I'm a devious character. I could be hiding something. How are you going to get me back to the old watch house? Don't even think about giving me some kind of potion.
No, well, blindfold you, twirl you around, take you the long way and walk you back, I promise.
Any other advice? Said Vimes gloomily.
Just be yourself, said Sweeper. See it through. There'll come a time when you'll look back and see how it all made sense.
Really?
I wouldn't lie. It'll be a perfect moment, believe me.
But...
Vimes hesitated.
Yes?
You must know there's another little problem if I'm going to be Sergeant Keel.
I've remembered what day this is, and I know what's going to happen.
Yes, said Sweeper. I know, too. Shall we talk about that?
Captain Tilden blinked.
What happened there? He said.
Where? Said Vimes, trying to fight down nausea. Time coming back had felt like being squeezed just for a moment in a giant vice.
You blood man!
Perhaps I'm a bit tired of this, said Vimes.
Listen, Captain, I am John Keel. I can prove it, okay? Ask me some questions. You've got my papers there, haven't you?
Tilden hesitated for a moment. He was a man whose mind was ponderous enough to have momentum. It was quite hard for his thoughts to change direction.
Who is commander of the Pseudopolis Watch, then? He said.
Sheriff McElwee, said Vimes.
Ah, wrong. Fallen at the very first fence, what? In fact, you fool, it's Sheriff Purley.
Excuse me, sir, said Snouty nervously.
Yes, what?
It is McElwee, sir. Purley died last week. Heard it in the pub.
Fell into the river when drunk, said Vimes helpfully.
That's what I heard, sir, said Snouty.
Tilden looked furious.
You could have known that, what? He said. It doesn't prove anything.
Ask me something else, then, said Vimes. Ask me what McElwee said about me.
I just hope I've got the answers right.
Well, said I was the best officer on his force, and he was sorry to see me go, said Vimes. Said I was of good character. Said he wished he could pay me the $25 a month I was going to get here.
I never offered you.
No, you offered me $20, and now that I've seen the mess here, I'm not taking it, Vimes rejoiced.
Tilden hadn't even learned how to control a conversation.
If you pay Nock $20, he owes you $19 change. The man couldn't talk and chew gum at the same time. Oh, look at this, will you?
Vimes dumped his handcuffs on the desk. The gaze of Snouty and Tilden swung to them as if magnetic.